My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert, recording this on Sunday, June 5th, 2022. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts, give the show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival. Subscribe, $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. This is episode 578. There's no guest. It's just me sitting here in my apartment late on a Sunday afternoon trying to give you the goods. I'd like to think that my week is starting off pretty great. I got up early. I had a nice breakfast. I had some, what did I have? I had an omelet with tomatoes, green peppers, and onions, Tillamook cheese, Mexican cheese, and some corned beef hash. I haven't had any corned beef hash in quite some time. Every at least once during the week, usually on the weekends, I like to have a nice omelet and a protein. And I did that. I like to do that whenever I can, whenever I have time to do that. And I did it. And I had an audition that I put on tape. It's due on Tuesday. I said, you know what? Let's get it done on Sunday. Let's get it done during the weekend. Let's make it happen. Let's put it on tape. And I did it, you know, so that was good. I feel like I'm starting the week off right. I got some chicken in soak, brining some chicken. I'm going to make some baked chicken, got some broccoli I'm going to make, I'm not going to make any, but I'm just going to cook it, and then some store-bought potato salad. So I'm living it up, ladies. store-bought potato salad. I have not done that. I don't know if that's, I'm used to my mother's potato salad, and I figured I just had a taste for something like a summer side. And I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. Cause my mom did I've been going back and forth from Maryland and Jersey. And she did make me some potato salad once. She had some that she made and I took some back and I had this, like, I had a vegetable and I had some of her potato salad and I bought like a little bit of that, what is the barbecue pork from Stu Leonard's, which actually they really do. They have an impressive barbecue section in their store. Now, I've only been to the one in Paramus, but it's nice when you're in a pinch. They have really good brisket. They have ribs. It's just pretty solid. And it's relatively, I don't say it's not cheap, but it's pretty good. It's reasonably priced. Because sometimes when you go to these like smoke shops around the area, it's super expensive, but solid. So I was just like, you know, I'll give it a go. And so I'm going to try this store-bought potato salad from Stop and Shop. I will say, though, I went to I was at Sam's Club recently. You know how they have folks that'll let you sample the different items and stuff. One time this lady had this loaded baked potato salad, and I tasted it, and it was really good. It was really intense, and they didn't have any, you know how Sam's Club has the everything's in bulk at Sam's Club, and it was just this really intense potato, like loaded baked potato salad, and they just had a vat of it. It's like, there's no way that my mother or me could eat all of that. It's just, it would just be a waste of money. And it was just this huge vat of loaded baked potato salad. But it was very good. That's something that you take to a cookout or something. That everybody, because it is good enough to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like if you were, I don't know, if they said bring a side and you didn't cook anything, I mean, could you get away with taking that to a party? I don't know, but you probably would get away with it if you got some of that and you brought alcohol. I think you'd be okay if you bought some of that and some alcohol. But it is a tasty side. It's just really intense. It's very, I was satiated. I don't think I, yeah, it was intense. It was just a lot going on. There's a lot going on. I was just, there's some stuff I want to talk about. I don't know how long this one will be. Another mass shooting, South Philly. Not in South Philly, but on South Street, downtown Philly. At least as of the time that I'm recording it, according to the New York Times, this article was updated at 9:46 a.m. on June 5th. Three people were killed and 11 were injured Saturday night in a shooting in downtown Philly, authorities said. 14 victims. Why did I say three people? Okay, yeah, I get it now. Well, that's me being dumb with the math. But yeah, it sucks. It's America's back, man. We're officially back with this string of mass shootings, man. Jesus Christ. Yeah. On a lighter note, I mean, I had a pretty good week. I got to do some stand up. I went, did the shout out to Jeff Cerulli and his crew, the Bomb Shelter Comedy show at the Gaff West in Hell's Kitchen. I did all right. I was trying new shit. And a lot of times when you try new shit, people are like, oh, what? And it was based on the weekend that I had last month at Levity Live when I was opening for Tammy Pescatelli, how I was just like working on new stuff and reincorporating old material, old bits, like restructuring, recommissioning. I was repurposing, I guess, old bits into newish stuff. And it was okay, but all the comments were, yeah, you can see you trying new stuff, and it's like, you know, you're trying to talk about real stuff, and sometimes it's, but it was good to get up, but I just wish that I could be getting up more, but so it goes, man. I had an audition that week. I went to my manager's office, put another audition on tape. And so I'm back in the game. I've kind of haven't really stopped auditioning. And I just want to keep the momentum going and keep plugging away. So that was good. The only other, I got a gig in July on the Brick City Comedy Review at Kilkenny Ale House. That's going to be the first Friday of the month in July. That's actually going to be July 1st. I'll be there, and that's going to be fun. And then I got a gig on the 15th at the Stress Factory that I'm looking forward to. So hopefully more gigs will come. Also, just a lot of binging on Metroid Dread. Now, I think I might have talked about it a week or two ago, how I was getting back to it. I got really far. And I'm at the last boss now, but it took me hours. I started on Saturday night, maybe at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and just, I don't even want to tell you. Let's just say another day had passed, and I just kept dying on this one level of this boss. Like, it wasn't even the final boss, and just kept kicking my ass. Like, I played that game on PS5, Returnal, for about an hour and got my ass kicked, and I never picked it up since. But Metroid Dread's probably the hardest game games I've played in recent memory. Because you can't really, I guess there was an update recently where you could put it on easy, but I have it on normal, and that game is pretty hard. It is really hard. And I was talking about it to some comics. We're talking about some games and stuff on last Thursday. And they were just like, I'm not going to play that. That game's just kicking my ass, but I got to beat it. Like, I'm on the last boss. I fought him. Like, after I beat that big boss, I think that's the second to last boss that I beat. And it took me so much time to beat that. And I just kept playing, and I got to the final boss, and I was just like, there's no way. Because Metroid, the bosses in that game have phases. Because it's not like you just like avoid these different attacks, and it's a pattern that they have. And yes, all of the bosses do have a pattern, but it's not like you just fight somebody and then they switch it up on you. And it's different phases that this motherfucker's in. And I think this second to last boss has, man, I'm thinking of like three or four, maybe five or six different attacks off the top of my head. Just thinking about that. And it takes a minute. And when I finally beat this fucking monster. It was like I wasn't even doing it. I was like, oh, I did it. And I said, because I was at the point when I beat him, it was draining all of my energy. And I was like, I'm not going to make it. And I just put on Kendrick Lamar, like, for the last, I was playing like the Kendrick Lamar records off the second CD. And I was playing that. Then I just said, oh, well, I'm getting my ass kicked. Let me just listen to some music while I get my ass kicked. And I listened to the Childish Gambino album because of the internet. And I hadn't listened to it in a long time. And I just come off of like binging Atlanta, rewatching the series back to, now I'm back on season 3. So I think I'm on Cancer Attack now on season 3 after doing the rewatch. And I said, let me just listen to Because the Internet. And it's real. I forgot how good it was. Like, I enjoyed it when it first came out. But there were certain records that I would just pull off that I would just go to and listen to. Like, oh, okay, I feel like listening to 3005, or I want to listen to Sweatpants, or I want to listen to The Worst Guys, and, you know, just kind of vibe out to those. But then just taking it as a whole, I hadn't done that in quite some time. And I was like, oh my God, this is really good. And I remember, I think that Interview magazine where Donald interviewed himself, he said that Because the Internet is hip hop's OK Computer. And I'm not that familiar with Radiohead. I know a couple of songs or whatever, but I'm not that familiar with it. And I started to listen to OK Computer. But then that's when I started beating that boss. And I was like, okay, let me cut this off and see where I'm at with it. So I got to listen to that OK Computer album by Radiohead. Because a lot of hip hop artists do like Radiohead. And I've heard Fonte mention that Kid A at one point. It's maybe one of his favorite Radiohead albums or something. But he either way, when he spoke on it, he spoke on it like glowingly, like that he really liked it. So that's definitely an album that I want to listen to. But yeah, so I've just been like, I'm at this Last Boss and I don't want to play it. It's been over a week now and I don't want to play it right now because I'm afraid I'm just going to get locked in and then lose track of time. So maybe I'll get into it, like, if not this week, next week or something, because this next weekend I'll be busy. But I was just thinking, like, yo, I need to get back in because I want to beat this game and get it behind me. Then so I can start. I want to start Breath of the Wild. I want to start the Zelda joint because I hear that's just, I mean, it's a dense game. It's an open world game and it's arguably, people say, one of the best games ever. I think IGN did this breakdown of the best games of all time. And it's a list is a list, and everybody's going to get, you know, in comedy, when people make lists like that, people get upset. But, you know, so we'll see. But it's up there because I know right around the time when Horizon Zero Dawn came out, Zelda came out. Prior to that, I believe, well, they both came out around the same time, and it kind of it stole Horizon Zero Dawn's thunder, because I thought that first game was fantastic. Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West is really fun too, and it's great. But yeah, so that's gaming news. That's what I'm into. That's what I've been doing. I got a new water bottle and that was like the highlight. Thankfully, doing a couple auditions in a show, getting this new water bottle would not be the highlight of my week. I found there's this water bottle brand called company called Zulu. And I don't have any sponsors, but I think I got like a 24-ouncer, and I liked it because I was looking for something that I could have in my car and whatnot. And I had another water bottle. I must have lost it. It's probably somewhere in the trunk of my car or under my car seat. It's a solid one, and it was good. And I said, why don't I just try to get a bigger one that I could just keep at my place, and then this other one that I like, just take it back and forth when I'm traveling, you know, and I could just save money on buying water and stuff. So I got that, and I do like it. The only thing about this new one is when I take a drink out of it, it sounds like I'm at SeaWorld and I'm playing with the dolphins or like feeding them, because it just makes this weird sound. I'm going to see if I can make it happen. I want to take a sip out of it and you can see what I'm talking about. You hear that? It's so weird. And I tried it with the straw. It comes with a straw that goes down, that goes inside of it. And I tried it taking it out, and it still does that. It's really weird, but a very good water bottle nonetheless. So I would say, if you're in the market for a new water bottle, check out Zulu. I got it from Target. So I would not, I'd try not to steer you wrong here. Some sad news in the NFL. We lost Marion Barber, who was a running back who played most of his career with the Dallas Cowboys. When he closed out his career with the Chicago Bears, such a great running back, just a bruiser of a running back. I remember when he was with Minnesota in college, and just he was just a really talented running back who, kind of like in the spirit of an Earl Campbell, that would just run your ass over, and just really talented. I remember, you know, when he was with the Cowboys, you know, my dad loved the Dallas Cowboys, and you know, when you're a kid, you like who your dad likes and whatnot, but he was a Cowboys fan. We used to watch him, you know, watch him play. And it was him and Julius Jones. Julius Jones was a more of a finesse running back. And Marion Barber was like kind of like your every down bruiser running back that was just, you know, he was essentially the last of a dying breed. There's still guys that'll run you over. There's Henry with, you know, with I think he's still with the Titans. There's guys that run you over, but it's almost like, you know, it's just a different time now. Where running backs aren't really valued as much as they once were. And, yeah, man, he's just really, really good. He left it all out there on the field. And I don't know, he had some mental health issues or something going on. And the details, I don't think at this time, haven't been released. I don't know. You know what happened, but it's sad, man. 38 years old, young guy. Yeah, so it just RIP to that man and condolences to his family. Entertained a lot of people. And who was he? Who was his teammate? Who was his teammate with? I thought that I had it in my notes that I was gonna just talk about him for a bit. Let me see if I can just the Minnesota roster. When was he in college? I'm just gonna have to do this like this. And when was he there? Oh boy, I'm trying to figure this out. So Minnesota roster to Minnesota Gophers football roster 2004. Let's see, because I know there was somebody else on that team. These fucking ad blockers, can we just go by position? Can we go not by the, oh my god, why do they try to make this so difficult? Sort by jersey, sort by position. I'm trying to think who the other running back was that was on his, that they used to be in tandem with each other. You know, I think the computer gods, when you're looking up something, they try to make Lawrence Maroney. That's it. Lawrence Maroney. And Lawrence Maroney went to the Patriots. Like both those dudes, 5'11". Just like these bruising running backs. That was a hell of a tandem. And how long did Lawrence Maroney play? Lawrence Maroney played for a good while. But that's like when they just put, like, kind of ran these guys in the ground. Like, they just hardcore running backs. Lawrence Maroney, I don't think he played that long in the league. Yeah, he didn't play as long, but in his college career, man, hell of a running back. Big Ten co-freshman of the year, two-time first team. I want to look at it. Let's look at Marion Barber. Yeah, he made the pro. So Marion Barber played from 05 to 2011. What, six years? 7 years. 4,700 yards, 53 touchdowns, that over 1,000 yards in receiving, 6 touchdowns, so close to 60 touchdowns. Yeah, he was a beast. He was just a guy that just kind of left it all out on the field. Very good running back, man. Fun to watch. And yeah, so RIP to him, man. Very talented dude. A little bit of news, like the Obi-Wan Kenobi Disney Plus series premiered, I guess, last week. I think they dropped 2 episodes, and the Star Wars quote unquote fans were bitching about this actress, Moses Ingram, for playing one of the enemies, like one of the Inquisitor characters. And good for Disney and Star Wars for clapping back at that schism, at that racism, young. And Ewan McGregor clapped back. And it's just no place for that, man. But that's, again, that's the bullshit that people of color have to deal with in everyday life, not just in show business, but everyday life. It sucks because this girl's talented. She's a decorated actress. I just found out before I cut this on that she was a Yale Mafia, got her MFA at Yale School of Drama, Baltimore girl. So more props to her. I remember seeing her in The Queen's Gambit, who she was like Anya Taylor-Joy's one of her friends in the orphanage. And her career is just starting out, man. It's starting out really, really good. She's in this Ambulance movie, which I have not seen. The Tragedy of Macbeth. Yeah, she's a beast, man. She's a young, talented actress. She's going to be around for a while. So you racist just got to deal with that. I don't know. I just, that stuff, it makes me mad. But that's who that fan base is. And they kind of don't care. They are racist. I would assume that they're homophobic too. And they just don't, it's almost like they don't like nobody. Because they did this with the kid, Jake Lloyd, the white kid that played a young Anakin. They did it with Hayden Christensen. They did it with Marie Tran? What is her name? The young Asian actress? Marie Tran? Kelly Marie Tran. They did it to her. Who else did they do it to? They just kind of did it to everybody. They talked shit about like my man Finn, John Boyega. So they, Daisy Ridley, they don't care. They're pretty like across the board. So they really don't discriminate. They're just, I guess those kind of people are just pieces of shit when it comes down to it. Yeah, man, it's no place for that. And I just get to the, you just get to the point where it's like, hey, you know, don't watch it. Don't watch the show. Cause these people have, it's just, I guess people are just getting tired of that mediocrity, man, where they just want to see other people. These studios, they're slowly catching wind of it, but white people are not losing. You're not losing out on anything. Because every time I go to the movies, it's a trailer for, you know, it'd be white. And be white folks in it, man. And I don't get mad. If it's of interest to me, I'll go see it. You know, like people of color, minorities. I can speak from this black perspective. Black people in general, if it's good to us, we're going to go see it. If we're interested in it, we're going to see it. We don't care now there's some black people that, because I have friends who have friends that are like, I have a friend who's like, if my wife don't see no black people in it, she not going. Me, you know, I'll go see such and such or whatever, but my wife, she's not seeing it. There are people like my friend's wife who just like the black shit. And I like that black stuff too, but I'm more liberal when it comes to my entertainment. If it's something that I'm interested in, I'm a check it out, regardless of the race of the people. Now, sometimes that might factor in with a movie like The Green Knight, which I need to rewatch, which I bought, and I need to rewatch it. That piques my interest. And I say, okay, Dev Patel is the lead in this. Yeah, I'm a check this out because he's a great actor, and it's a brown dude at the lead, and it's gonna be a little more interesting because it's something you don't always see. So inclusion doesn't mean, it just seems like what some white people think inclusion means, that they're not gonna have a place at the table at all, And I think I was re-listening to an episode. I was listening to an episode that I recently did with the homie Jim Search, which if you haven't listened to, I think it was a fun one. And we were just talking about race. And I mentioned this time where, like, I'll get into it a little deeper here, where a manager who was white, he told me, "Oh, you're gonna be all right." I was eating dinner with him at the comedy club. And I was hosting, and this other white guy who was Jewish and the owner of the comedy club chain was Jewish, and this other guy was featuring, and we were opening for somebody, and I was just like, I think it was a last minute thing where they asked me to host. I think maybe eventually I had moved up to featuring at the club, but I liked working at the club because it's not far from me. And who if you weren't doing shit that weekend, I'd rather be doing stand up. You know what I mean? So whatever, it's all good. I don't mind to host and stuff like that. And we just happened where he was in town and he came by and we were eating. He said, "Oh, you'll be all right. And you'll be all right because you're black. You'll be okay." Then he didn't like my manager. But then that same owner passed on this white comic who was, to be honest, he was okay. He was fine. But that guy got passed up and up and is doing the club now. He's touring the clubs that guy owns. Well, when I reached out to just try to at least try to feature around the clubs that he owns, nothing. Did not get back to me. And the funny thing is, the mediocre comic, he's moved up in the ranks and is working regularly. And I didn't get his email or something like that when we were talking. And I emailed that comic. He's like, "Oh, you know, I don't know if I should give it to you because it's a, you know," he was trying to be like weird about giving me the email. And I was like, "All right, man, I was like, "Fuck you, dude." And I think he gave it to me, but I didn't say that to him, but it was just weird after that. And I don't think I've seen him since that weekend or whatever, but it was just really to try to like, to have a comic like that of that level, of that skill level, who I deem, you know, not as good as me. I'm not going to say, but I don't think he was as good as me. And for him to act like he was doing me a favor of giving that club owner's email to me was just like a slap in the face. And I'm just like, you know what, man? Because there's been people that ask me for emails and people, I say, "Yeah, sure. Tell them I gave you the email." But yeah, I did not like that. That's one of those moments that you just never forget in show business, where like at the time, like I had credits and stuff like that. I was a working actor. I was doing stuff. I don't know if I had booked that. I don't think I had booked I had booked some good stuff at the time. It was just somebody that was just trying to work. And it's like, not even because some clubs build people up where you could work off nights, where you could do a one nighter on a Thursday, a one nighter on a Sunday. Yeah, you see people like that. The people that aren't famous but are good enough to be closing shows and stuff like that. It's just it's a dirty game, man. It's a dirty game. That's something I'll never forget. And it was really shitty. But one of the reasons could have been like he didn't like my manager or whatever, but I didn't have anything to do with that, you know. I guess sometimes in businesses people don't get along, but it was just really, that really made me mad. And then to see like a mediocre person get moved up and just moved into the system, not like this dude's famous, but it's like, "Oh man, I would love to work an off night at one of those dudes' clubs around the country. Oh, I would love to close out your smaller room in that club and would do a good job at it." the manager of one of your clubs calls me whenever she needs somebody. If she needs somebody to fill in or somebody drops out, I gladly worked there recently, earlier this year. I don't have a problem with doing that. You know, but it sucks, man. But that's something that black people go through all the time. And I'm not saying woe is me. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm telling you how some people see you. They don't want you. They want to be your friend and they want to work with you so long as they're on top of you, as they're over you. As long as they're doing a little better than you, then that's when they will keep you around. And then sometimes when you start to get stuff on your own and you start to do things, and it's like they don't want to talk to you anymore, or they back off, or when you start doing well, they kind of put you to the side and bring on other people. There's a lot of stories I could tell. I'm not going to Monique this episode, but but man, it's stuff that makes you mad. And that it's, I don't want to get too much into it, but like, I know the Monique and D.L. Hughley feud, it's just gotten ridiculous. It seems to me like D.L. was the headliner and that's what happened. And I guess Monique got mad about it. Even if she did get mad, even if she was supposed to headline, you're supposed to be a professional about that. You're supposed to do your time. If D.L. goes on last, it's like, yeah, then you kill for your 45 minutes that you're supposed to be on stage. You kill. And then take it up. If you feel like you've been mistreated, take it up with the promoter or sue the promoter. But you don't go out there and talk shit about somebody, their sexuality and all this stuff on stage to a crowd that came to laugh. It's unprofessional. I don't care if it's talking about that black woman in that moment was wrong. And it don't mean that I don't like black women, you know? When people say what you want about DL, I don't like what DL said about this thing 5 years ago or whatever. I think DL might be a problematic fave to a lot of people, but I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you a story. Story time. In the Chris Lambert Chronicles, I talked about this. I think this might have happened before I had this podcast, but I had two experiences with DL Hughley. 2012, I was working at Levity Live, and I told you guys, this has gone on throughout the podcast. That club opening and Steve Mazzilli, when he ran that club, that was very, very instrumental in my progression in show business, because it was a place that he allowed me to work and host a bunch of shows, make money. And that was one of the first times being in the New York City area, being in the area of New York City, where I was able to make some pretty good money working at the club. And like, there was a weekend I worked there and I had made enough money to put four tires on my then Ford Explorer. And that's when my parents were like, oh, you can actually make money doing that. You know, you can make money doing comedy. And I was maybe 4 years in, 3-4 years in. And they were starting to see. And like, my dad would always say, oh, that's your club. Because I would be working there. He said, what are you doing this week? I'm working at Levity. He's like, oh, okay, that's your club. He said, that's Chris's club. You know, and it was just like, I really learned. And even when I wasn't working, if there was somebody that I wanted to see, I could go there. I could sit in the back of the room and watch. And that one that happened to be on a Sunday. D.L. Hughley, I believe, had a weekend there, and I went to watch the show. And then like, I was just thinking like, maybe I could dap him up because I worked the club, and I could just say, hey, D.L., Chris Lambert, comic, big fan of you since I was a kid. And I would think that would be it. And so I go up, I said, oh, you think I can meet D.L.? And I just like shook his hands, like, oh, big fan, said, you know, enjoy your work, really enjoyed it. He said, oh, yeah, you tweeted the thing. But yeah, I was like, because I could tell you were a comic, blah, blah, blah. And he said, come on backstage. So I went to the green room and hung out. And then come to find out, I knew his one of his managers, his road manager's daughter, went to school with her. The road manager called his daughter up. He said, "Yeah, I know Chris." And it's like, "Oh shit!" And we're just talking and whatever. And I just talked to DL about his set. I was working on, I think the big thing I had was working on at the time. Maybe I was working on doing a set at one of these cool hip shows at one point. It might have been College Humor, but I don't think it was College Humor Live. I'm not sure. But he was just talking about how to break down your set when you're working it, you know, trying to build a bigger set, blah, blah, blah. Just gave me some advice. We were shooting the shit. And then, because I think that I believed, and this happened, this might have been early to mid 2000s. I remember going to the Airy Crown Theater in Chicago with that friend of mine from theater school to see D.L. Hughley tape one of those Latham specials. And I remember just going to, before I was a comic, before I'd always loved stand up, and, you know, D.L. Hughley was one of those people that I watched all the time. Obviously, Kings of Comedy. And again, another full circle moment, that same woman that I'm talking about, a black woman that I took to see American Beauty. She and I went to that mall. I went to the Bowie Town Center. I think that was just that theater over there. But we went, she and I went to see Kings of Comedy in 2000. Went to see that movie. And 12 years later, I'm backstage with D.L. Hughley. Like a full circle moment. And we're talking, and then I think his manager, I said, "Yo, do you think I could just like maybe open for him sometime or do a little time on one of his shows? I see he's going to be at Caroline's in a month or two." So yeah, we'll see about it. And then we did work it out, exchanged numbers. And the first time I went on stage at Caroline's in New York City, Caroline's on Broadway, was opening for D.L. Hughley. And it was just like 5 minutes. I did 5 minutes. You could do 5 minutes. You take the hit. And I went up before the host and did time, did really well. And I did most of that weekend. And I'll never forget that. And then that Friday night, I think we started on a Friday night. I went with his crew to, oh man, it's one of those places. It was one of these cool hip restaurants. I'll probably remember it after I cut this off. But we went to this place right near the club, and it was a really nice place. And I had sea bass for the first time, first and only time actually, and it was really good. And he ordered a bunch of food for the table. And I think I had chicken and I was trying to cut it up, and they made fun of me. It was like, "Why are you cutting that chicken up with a knife, man? Pick that chicken up and eat it." And they made fun of me, and we talked and stuff like that. And it was just a really good time. He was really nice. He was really kind to me. Very professional. Now, I don't always agree with some of the things that he says, but I think he's a great comic as a comic. He's very funny. And that was it. And he gave me a shot. The first time I touched it, And all of the times, really, that I touched stage at Caroline's were because of other comics ahead that were further in the game that gave me a shot. And that's what I was talking about last week. All that I have in this industry, in this business, my only ticket is my talent. I only have what I bring to the table. It's not because of it's not people. Yeah, I guess in a way is who I know, but my first weekend working at Caroline's, I believe I'd have to look back at some calendar stuff or something or some emails was. So working with DL was like kind of like I just came and he put me on. It wasn't like you are officially opening for it, but I did time on his shows. But the first time I did a full weekend was opening for Wyatt Cenac, and that might have been like later on that year opening for him. And I was like, switched off like emceeing and featuring that weekend, but I featured for the first night. I mean, emceed for the first night and then featured the rest of the weekend. And that was Wyatt Cenac. That was through his kindness. I had worked with him at the Arlington Draft House, and he was not really nice to me. And I got paid, the club paid me, and then he paid me on top of what the club paid. And that was real, real G shit. And a couple other times I worked with Chris Hardwick because I had worked with him at the Draft House. Those are those connections that, you know, people like Randolph and Andy. That's why I always speak highly of them. I love those guys. But my talent was my currency, and that's how I got on. Now, other people, they work there a lot. And I saw in an interview where somebody famous was talking about that. But I got in. I just don't know. I don't know why that didn't happen for me in that way. But I still got to have those experiences. And it's something I'll never forget, because it's something about that room. That Caroline's is to me, like, and that's one of the first places if not the first place I headline in New York City. You know, you do one of these nights, it's like an off night, and you headline, and the comics will call it a glorified bringer. And now you see people doing them. You see folks doing them, and they size it. And make it a big deal, because it is a big deal if you're doing it. But part of me feels like it's sized a little bit more now. But when I did it, than when I did it like 8 or 9 years ago, whenever it was, that's just funny. But I did it, had a nice little crowd in there, rocked it out, made out with the girl afterwards off the strength of my set. And I had a good time. I think it's a special place. That room, you go down in the basement, and when it's packed out, when you got people in there, you feel that shit, man. And it was fun doing it. But DL was the first person to help me touch stage down there at one of the best clubs in the city, in New York City. And my dad told me before, when I was working there, when I eventually did that breakout artist series where you know that glorified bring, he said, "You're on Broadway." I was like, "Oh fuck, I am." Yeah, and I never looked at it that way, because you can kind of be pessimistic, and you could be kind of a glass half empty. The show business can make you that way if you let it. And I've had my bouts with it where you're just like, "Oh, it's just a glorified bringer." And then my dad, who was outside of it, was like, "Are you on Broadway? That's Broadway." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, it is. It is Broadway." I know he did that for me, and he didn't have to do that. DL did that, and he was a professional about it. And whether she had a dispute with DL about that or not, I mean, that could have been handled through other channels, and not like slandering the guy's name and talking about his family and his dog and all this shit. I don't know. And it sucks. It sucks when you see black people going at it like that. Not a fan of it. And there was some other shit that people were talking about on Friday. I was just like, ugh, I don't want to hear any more about it. Yeah, man, it sucks. But there's racism in this business. There's people that feud, and it tries to get the best of it. I think just with this podcast, and from my perspective, that's what I talk about. It happens like that in every field. And I'm a part of corporate America also. And I experienced some of the same things. It's just indifferent. It's in more codified language. It's in the way that people talk, the way people view you, and or the way that they don't give you. They don't have. Yeah, it's all bad. But you try to persevere through it all. I think that's what I wanted. Some of the main things I wanted to talk about. Like, after I was leaving that show, I was in Hell's Kitchen for 4 months last year, and as I was leaving, I found this Amish market in Hell's Kitchen that's been there the whole time on 9th on, I guess that's 9th Ave, if I'm not. Yeah, it's on 9th Ave in this nice Amish market. I spend a lot of time, like, you know, I talk about grocery stores all the time. And I would go to Food Emporium sometimes so I wouldn't have to go to the store while I was at home, because I was just so busy for those that time working on the play and working my day job. And I was like, oh, this market is pretty good, because I didn't want to get anything. I didn't want to get any pizza or any bad shit, then try to lay down on it and not sleep well and just feel guilty about myself. And I didn't want to do this. So I said, like, let me just go to this market. I'll just get a couple things. I know I need some things. So I was just like, I got some fruit and some stuff. It's pretty nice. I didn't know that that place existed. I was kind of mad that I didn't know. But being in New York, you're going to find it's going to be stuff that I, unless I'm in a real pinch, like I would, they had shredded cheese for $6.99. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I don't care how convenient that is. I am not doing that shit. It's just some stuff is just so expensive in New York City. I was watching this movie last night. I was watching that Joel Kim Booster movie, Fire Island. And it's like Fire Island is where, which I just found out not too long ago, it's like a great place for, is Fire Island, is that in the, that's in the Hamptons, right? Let me see. Fire Island, Hamptons. Is it in the Hamptons? Yeah, I think it is. Let's see. Fire Island is part of Suffolk County. It lies within the towns of Babylon, Islip, and Brookhaven, containing two villages and a number of hamlets. Yeah. So it is. It is the Hamptons. Anyway, where gay people party in the summertime and stuff like that. So I wanted to watch it. I'll talk about it more on Patreon. But it was a scene in the movie where they go to this market. And, oh, man, what were they talking about? They were talking about a particular item being like $7 that had no reason in hell to be $7. And then he said, yeah, this is this much here. And in the city, it's this much. And both those prices were expensive as fuck. And they were just, one of the characters was complaining about the markup there. And I was like, it's insane. There's just certain things in New York where, you know, they got to pay for the. What have I always said those years? The overhead, they got to pay for. I pay for the rent by charging you $7 for shredded cheese. But some of the things were reasonably priced. I was impressed by. But it's a nice little market. But I didn't see any Amish people. It was mainly like brown people working there. But I didn't get to try any of their, like, they had a nice little deli back there too. It's a really nice market. I got one of their bags too. But yeah, I did like that little store. That was another highlight. So thankfully, I would say if it wasn't for doing a show and having a couple auditions, it would have been going to the getting a new water bottle from Target was going to be the highlight, and going to the Amish market in Hell's Kitchen. I will say some of the best chicken that I've had was at, like, I think I had some really good chicken at the Reading Terminal Market, and it was from the Amish folks that made it. But then I remember one time my mom went to, an Amish market somewhere outside of Annapolis, and she brought back some cake. And it was almost like better than, it was really good. And I was like, is this better than anything that my black grandmothers and aunts have made? Ooh, don't want to tell them that. But I know, like, their chicken's really good and their cakes are good. And they build nice, they build these sheds down in Southern Maryland a lot. That's just like my interactions. Like, you see them going down Route 5. Like, if you're from the Maryland, D.C. area, and you're going down to Waldorf on Route 5, where you see those, like, sheds that they built for sale. So I really like that little market. It's almost like you're going into, like, a gift shop, and at an amusement park, but except they sell groceries. It's really nice because it's like you're in the city and it's all hot. It's like the fucking city. And then you go in this nice little market that's really cool. I liked it. I like the ambiance. If you've ever been in there, I can't be speaking out of class. Like somebody has to have experienced the Amish market in Hell's Kitchen. I think it's really nice. I can't be bullshitting. I don't even know. I thought it was really nice. So let me talk about some TV and a little bit of Muzak, and we'll get you out of here. So TV stuff that I've been watching, I watched Stranger Things. I enjoyed it. Like it kind of was like a slow build. I think I started last weekend and ended up finishing it like Memorial Day or something like that. But I did like it. I just hated how Eleven was being treated, the way that she was being bullied. It just made me angry. And then, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but it just pissed me off. So I was glad that there was a certain moment that she did what she did. And so I thought that was good. I had this tweet that went, I guess it went semi-viral, but it's got like currently, it's kind of slowed down, but I got like 44 retweets and 302 likes. And this is the tweet that I said. I said, "You know, Stranger Things is science fiction because Lucas is a bench warmer on the basketball team at a mostly white school." And I thought that was pretty funny. And then I thought like, oh, so a couple of my friends liked it. But then, you know, you kind of going about your day and you say, oh, this has been getting a lot of, you know, tweets. For me, it's a lot. And I thought that was funny. But then you see like people that you're just making it's kind of like a throwaway tweet. And then you have people that are like, what did they say? He's trash. And then somebody says, it's Indiana in the 80s. Very plausible. People are taking it like too seriously. And then somebody said, oh, well, he was a nerd. Let's see. They said he was a nerd until a year ago. What I find unbelievable is that he is one of three black kids on the team and he isn't called the N-word once, especially with this guy as a captain. The guy that plays the captain does look like he could be racist or like a bully. But it's like, that team doesn't look that good. And Lucas is black. He's got to have some athleticism. And, you know, it's just funny to me. I'm trying to see what somebody said. He's a freshman on the varsity team, trying to be literal. I was just making a joke, but people just try to be so like, that's what happens when you're like, I'm not that active on Twitter. But that's what a lot of my friends go through when they get a tweet that has some traction. And it's just like, and it just gets like people, and I just don't pay any attention to it. I want to say something, but I'm just like, whatever. And somebody said, he's clearly a nerd. But I'm like, it's him and maybe another black dude on the team. And it's like, they could probably be hooping, you know. But if you watch, you've seen a moment that was in the joint where you're like, oh, okay, well, it's good that happened. And then there's a moment in the during this fourth season, IGN wrote, what song would your friends play to save you from Vecna, which is the big bad this season? And it was this Kate Bush song called Running Up the Hill that one of the characters plays a lot. And that's gotten a lot of traction since Stranger Things came out last week. And I was like, damn, man, if it was me, I would say Optimistic by Sounds of Blackness. Crickets. That got nothing. But I thought that shit was funny. Funnier than the Lucas tweet. But whatever. What do you know? I don't know. I don't know the algorithm, how it goes. But I did like Stranger Things. It grew on me. I was thinking, yeah, did they? Now, I think part of it was COVID is why it took so long for them to come back. But It took me a little bit to get back in the groove of enjoying it, but I do enjoy it. I did enjoy it, and I'll be excited to. I'm assuming this is the last season, so I'm assuming it is. I don't know, but I'll be right there with it that weekend when it comes out in July. We Own This City on HBO Max. I thought that was really good. That really happened. That was based on a true story. My little running joke is that could be called We Own This Snitching, because all them cops is just telling on each other. I feel like John Barenthal needs, I think he should, this is like the best performance I've seen this year as far as TV stuff is concerned, where this TV acting, man. I want JL to watch this because I want to test JL's impressions, because he's got to. I want him to do, because he Barenthal's hitting this accent, hitting that Baltimore accent. I want JL to add that to his repertoire. He's really good. I think he's obviously a main character, and he's not as featured. But I think he put it down on that role, especially with the vocal work, like. My girl, Kate Winslet did on Mayor of Easttown. Now Barenthal's kind of got an edge, cause he's from the area. But he's great. He's great in this. Like I think they got to at least nominate him for that role. So I've been liking that, loving Barry. Barry is like this last episode. I think this is episode. Let me see. Season 2, Season 3, episode. Let's see, Barry, HBO. I think it's episode 7. Yeah, it's episode. Wait a minute, episode 6. Season 3, episode 6. 7:10 in. So I think that's supposed to be 7:10 north. That's what that stands for. That's the best episode of that series. Holy shit. I watched it twice. Low key want to watch it again. Brilliant episode. And the way that, like, I'm listening to Bill Hader on, the Prestige. I think it's the Prestige podcast or whatever it is on. It's on Spotify, but it's the Prestige pod. I think it was Sean Fennessy. Oh boy. But anyway, you can just look it up. Every week he's had Bill Hader on the pod recapping the episode, and he goes into the technical aspects of it. And man, it's incredible, man. Like, Barry is so good this season. It's like last week I was so exhausted. I think I finished the episode, but I was trying to watch it live, you know, like as it, you know, that night. And I was just kind of like fighting sleep. And just to watch it. But that show is so good. It was so good last week. And they got 2 more episodes left. So I'm excited, man. I think I might have to get a nap in before I watch, you know, before I watch it so I don't fall asleep. But it's really great this season. Of course, I talked about the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. I'm liking it so far. It just seems like all these shows, like Mandalorian, I haven't seen Boba Fett, but it's like all these are like escort missions. It's cool to see the pew pew and all that shit, the acting. You see some famous people and stuff but it's cool. You know, I keep up with it. I have not seen Boba Fett, but I mean, I did like the Mandalorian. I think the second season was very good. I think it was better than the first. Like, you know, they just kind of built on what they did with the first one. Yeah, so I've been liking it. It's cool so far. It's not nothing like, it's not blowing me away, but it's good. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And how about a little Muzak? I started listening to Japanese Breakfast. It's a pop band that is... that Michelle Zauner is the front woman of. and I saw them on SNL, and I had kind of clocked this band before that. Not to say I'm cool or hip or anything, because they've been around for a minute, but I just like remember seeing, you know what it was? Michelle Zahner did an interview, did a A24 podcast with Koganada. And those of you that have been listening to the show know that I love Koganada because he directed my favorite movie of recent memory, Columbus. And he recently did After Yang. And then both of them, A24 kind of pairs people up to like shoot the shit, and they do a podcast and they interview each other. So she was on. I was like, oh yeah, she's Japanese Breakfast. I remember like maybe seeing that name somewhere, or like Shazamming a song maybe that she had done of Japanese Breakfast and being like, oh, that's an interesting name. Listen to that podcast recently, earlier this year. And I know that she's got this book she's turning it into a movie called Crying in H Mart. It's like a memoir or a series of essays. And I think it's dealing with her mother. Let me just make sure. It is a memoir. It is a series of essays. More homework for Chris. I know that because I would like to read it. But just kind of being like, okay, I like her. I like what she was talking about. I listened to their most recent album called Jubilee. I was on my way home, taking a long drive back to Jersey. And I just said, I'm not sick of listening to podcasts, but just, I don't want to get drowned out. I don't want to get tired. Let me put on some music. So I put Jubilee on. And it's good. I liked it. And I liked her performance on SNL. So I was like, I'm putting it on my playlist on iTunes, added it to my stuff. And I do like it. And I listened to, the second one last week. The one right before that, I think. Ooh. Let me see. I don't have my phone on me. Oh, okay. I listened to Soft Sounds from Another Planet from 2017. So I listened to two. I like them. I like Japanese Breakfast. And Michelle Zahner has done some stuff with, did she do First We Feast? Where she goes and Michelle Zahner. I think she does something with, is that Complex? Munchies. She's done stuff with Munchies, and she goes to different restaurants and interviews people and stuff about their food and all that stuff, like that, the pretty cool shit. So she seems like she's cool. I need to read this book. I need to read her memoir. There's so much shit that I'm just, oh my god, I know. More homework for Chris. But I do like Japanese Breakfast. If you're interested, check out both of the songs that she did on, that they did, the Japanese Breakfast did on SNL. Maybe you will be into it. And I think with that, that's all I got for you this week. I hope this pod finds you doing well. I hope it finds you doing better than you were last week. If it doesn't, I hope it's in the midst of you trying to do better. And with that, thank you so much for listening. I will talk to you all next time. Take it easy, everybody.